The stories of the bush are told in many ways, sometimes with overwhelming force, so that we cower in awe and fear, sometimes with spectacular drama, so that we gasp in wonder, but mostly they are told quietly, so that you have to be vigilant and sensitive to hear them. To me, it's often those subtle ones, the background sounds, the wafts of odors, the marks on the earth and the vegetation that bear the richest and the most charming narratives. But for most of us, they go unnoticed as we blunder forth, searching for the large and the spectacular, to which our senses have become used. On the African savanna, the dry season is a wretched and often brutal time. Relentlessly and with absolute dispassion, it makes undone the abundance of summer, then proceeds to strip the filth of its bare skeleton. It is the time when the pans evaporate to patches of cracked mud, and the little ravines wither to a few pools and finally to white meanders of sand. And the game must walk further and further to water from where there is still some grazing. And they grow thin and weary, and the weak become weaker, and they are easy prey to predators, or they simply give up and die. The surrounds of the few remaining waterholes become dust-trodden and muddy-edged, and rich with stories like about the black bull. He had come from where he could still find patches of grass, and when he reached the waterhole it was near midday and it was hot as in the mouth of a furnace. He stepped into the water and braced himself on his hind legs and stretched to where it was still less muddy and sated himself. Then he waded deeper and splashed down and lay in the coolness. And later he rolled and burrowed into the mud so that the water surged over the edges and washed away the other tracks. And perhaps the pair of dainty little steenbok that had come after him had waited patiently for the brute to finish his indulgence and then watched him lumber off, even now with his massive neck almost hairless and his horns worn into polished stumps. He still had that arrogance that he had learnt when he was one of the mighty in the herd, and his challengers watched him pass with rolling eyes and drawn in chins. And perhaps the steenbok were grateful to him, because this was their territory, where they had lived together for a few years now, and it was their only waterhole when it got really dry. And although there was now a little less water in it, he had carried off some mud on his hide, and the waterhole would be just that little bit deeper, and in the next rainy season it would hold just a little bit more water and last just a little bit longer. They had moved closer, hesitant and watchful, for they knew the fear of the fragile that made them quick and furtive in the bush. They bent to drink, dainty as sunbirds, one at a time, while the other watched nervously for the flash of yellow that would tell of the leopard. We found her marks a little further back, where she had crouched among the tufts of grass and shrubs, low as a snake, hoping for a chance to pounce. I am reminded of something I wrote in Paths of the Tracker. I read it to you. It is about Craig's bush school. He loved the stories Henry told him about the signs, where an elephant cow had pushed a still unstable calf up the bank of a steep ravine, or where a sable bull had honed the tips of his great scimitars on the gravelly earth, or where a big male lion had knelt down low in the black mud on the edge of a pool to fill himself with coolness, leaving the huge prints of his splayed front paws and fine lace-like marks where his mane had brushed the soft mud. Oh, the beautiful stories of the bush.